If you say the name Nicholson Baker to some librarians these days, the reaction you get may make you feel as though you'd yelled out loud in the quiet room. Nicholson Baker has librarians talking, and some of them stewing, over his new book. It's titled Double Fold: Libraries and the Assault on Paper. And in that book, he lays out a passionate argument against library practices of the past few decades, in particular, the way in which older books and newspapers were microfilmed and then the originals thrown away in order to save space. Nicholson Baker says a large part of our history is going away with those originals, which were often in perfectly good shape. In order to preserve some of that past, he has set up the American Newspaper Repository and has bought a collection of thousands of older U.S. papers. He's now renting out a warehouse in New Hampshire in which he stores them. Nicholson Baker joins us now. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
You write in Double Fold that what the libraries in America have done is akin to the National Park Service chopping down huge tracts of fir trees and replacing them with plastic Christmas trees.
Yes, well, what happened was that the places like the Library of Congress had immense collections on the shelf of bound newspaper volumes. These things were in good shape, but beginning in the 1950s, they decided that they would replace these things with microfilm. So what you had was a mass replacement of stuff that was in really beautiful shape with stuff that is on acetate plastic that doesn't last very long and isn't as beautiful by any means as the originals.
There was a concern decades ago that books that were printed on acid paper would disintegrate someday, and there was therefore a need to preserve that text. So in that context, it would seem that microfilming those pages would be the answer.
Well, yes, if we were sure that the books were going to disintegrate into illegibility at some date soon, then of course we should engage on a civilization-saving microfilming program. And that's in a sense what the microfilming lobby convinced Congress was happening. But in fact, we weren't. There weren't millions of books turning to dust. The predictions that was 97% of the books that were published in the first third of the 20th century would be unusable by the turn of the 21st century have not come true. And what has happened, however, is that about $100 million has gone from the federal government to libraries for the microfilming of books and newspapers. And in many cases, the original books are guillotined as part of the microfilming, and the originals are thrown out afterwards. So the only destruction that's happened is the destruction that was part of the copying process, and not the destruction, the intrinsic destruction or chemical problems in the paper.
Now, when you say guillotining, what are you talking about here?
There's a device called a guillotine, and it's a way of neatening up the edges of the pages. I mean, I'm not making up an alarmist word. That's the name of this machine. I have seen guillotined volumes. In one case, I was given one by one of these microfilm proponents. She wanted me to see what a brittle book looked like. Well, this was one book that had been guillotined and withdrawn by Columbia University in the 80s because it was at risk for immediate disintegration. Well, it's, you know, over 15 years later, and the pages are still in fine shape. They just happened to be guillotined. So there was really a kind of a mass hysteria there that was created or marketed by the people who wanted to impose a new vision of libraries on us. They wanted to create a lot of microfilm and then, as a second step, turn it into a digital library. It hasn't worked out that way, but that was the plan.
Well, how and why did this happen? How could it happen then if, as you were saying, the microfilm wasn't as good as the original copies in many cases?
Because the library managers thought that there was something called intellectual content, meaning just the words on the page, and that all you really needed for history was a copy of the words, a somewhat legible copy of the words. And microfilm does provide that. It also saves space. You take something that's huge, like a bound newspaper volume, and heavy, and you condense it into all these little frames about the size of a saltine cracker, you know, on film. And it takes up much less space.
I understand the library's argument to this is that by microfilming newspapers, they got more access for those newspapers for more people in other parts of the country.
Mm. Well, now there's something. If you make a good microfilm of a newspaper and you don't throw the original away, then you really have something. You have a roll of film that you can mail around, and that is access. In the case of books, however, what happens is the library that owned the book now owns a roll of film, and the book itself could have been lent by interlibrary loan, and now the roll of film is lent by interlibrary loan. There's been no net increase in access. In fact, the microfilm, because it's known by people who use it as an information burial system, has really decreased the amount of access. Things that are microfilmed are less read as a result of being stored on these strips of plastic.
But the libraries have more space now. And I was struck by your observation that libraries were concerned, or in your view, obsessed with this idea of freeing up more shelf space. And a lot of people may think of the library as the place to go for books that we couldn't possibly contain on the shelves in our own homes. Yet it also seems clear that local libraries do have to do some weeding
of
their shelves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, local libraries, especially public libraries, have a different kind of mission. They get in books and they get rid of books, and that's perfectly normal and understandable. But major research libraries, we're talking about, say, the top 100 libraries in the country, have a responsibility to respect what the generations of librarians in their wisdom put on the shelves, because their job is to keep what people read or and have read. And the space argument is not a compelling argument, in my opinion, because if you take the Library of Congress, which is the library we most want to keep, to keep the things that we as a country produce, the Library of Congress has spent many, many millions, not just on microfilming, but on really wiggy programs. And those programs have cost so much, and all of that money could have gone towards the low-cost leasing of really not that much storage space. If I can hold the last remaining run of the Chicago Tribune and the New York Herald Tribune over 80 years, and these things are heavy and they're big, they're whales of paper, really, in a sense. If I can do it as a, you know, private citizen running a little nonprofit, it just doesn't seem to me that places like the Library of Congress, which have people who are much better at this than I am and budgets of many, many millions of dollars, can't do it. I don't see what the problem here is with space.
I'd like to talk a bit about how you came to acquire these volumes of newspapers. Now, how many newspapers do you have right now in the American Newspaper Repository?
Well, all of these came from the British Library, which had the last remaining collection of U.S. newspapers. And they are required by law to keep British papers in the original, but not foreign papers. And somewhere along the way, they just decided to get rid of all their foreign papers, including U.S. papers. And so I ended up bidding on them, because otherwise they would be sold to newspaper dealers who cut them up for keepsakes and historical issues. And eventually they were shipped to the United States, and they are in this mill building, a brick mill building built in 1848 in Rollinsford. And there are about 100 titles. Not only are they some of the big New York papers, including the New York Times and the World and the Herald Tribune, but they're also all these ethnic papers, Slavic, Greek papers, all published in America by immigrant groups. And it's really kind of an amazing thing. The Yiddish New York Forward, which has these beautiful rotogravure sections of lost cities in Poland, and just beautiful pictures.
What's the most valuable of those papers to you?
I think probably the most valuable run of a paper is Joseph Pulitzer's paper, the New York World. The New York World in the first third of the 20th century was the literary New York paper. It's where Walter Lippmann was published. Dorothy Parker's poem about men seldom make passes at girls who wear glasses, you know, that was in the New York World. It was where E.B. White first published poetry. It was James M. Cain, who wrote The Postman Always Rings Twice, had a column in the... Oh, and O. Henry. O. Henry wrote a story a week for the New York World. And it's just incredible to me to think that this is probably the last... And it's in beautiful condition as well. So that probably is at the top of the list. But actually, they're all so excruciatingly rare that it's difficult to put a dollar figure on them or anything. they just deserve not to be cut up. That's my feeling. It's sort of an elementary feeling beyond any arguments that you can make about informational content or historians need these things for research resources. They're just obviously old. They're obviously beautiful. We obviously should keep them.
In the world of librarians, you seem to have caused an uproar here. And at least one has suggested that as a journalist and as a writer whose work is the written word, that you may be overly sensitive to the idea that books and volumes are being thrown out.
Well, I guess I'm not alone in thinking that we ought to keep the written word. We're not talking about keeping every copy of these things. I mean, if a newspaper published a million copies a day, as the Pulitzer paper did, we're talking about keeping 1/1,000,000th of what was there. And right now, it would be nice if one library out of all of them kept one set of the New York Times currently. No library collects the New York Times now. You know, that I think maybe I'm being overly zealous and fetishistic and eccentric and, you know, I don't know, all the things that sometimes are said, but it could be that I'm right, you know.
Well, Nicholson Baker, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Nicholson Baker is author of Double Fold, Libraries and the Assault on Paper. He is also founder of the American Newspaper Repository.